at 10:30. But coming up now, what a dumb phrase. Right now,
you're nervous.
We needed to bring someone on because we need a little bit of an expert here, because lately my nightly routine has included checking one particular Twitter account to see if I can find any gold on there. And I'll go ahead and bring Bob Sturm on from the Bob and Dan Show here on The Ticket first. Bob, are you there?
Hey now. Huh? Hello, guys.
Did we get through the soccer game well?
You know, we have mixed emotions right now, Justin, but thank you for asking.
Well, we're going to have you at 9:50, but we didn't want to take away from any possible stoppage time. So we knew, when you're playing Man U, you want to make sure you have your full attention.
It's a big one. I appreciate your accommodating my schedule. Thank you.
So I think that we're all aware of this Twitter account that has been a part of my nightly routine. And it just goes by Funhouse on Twitter. And pretty much daily, he posts clips from the Mike Francesa show in New York.
Yes, sir.
And it's not like he's, you know, I guess he has a couple times, but he's not really playing all of Francesa's hits and all of the good moments from his show. It's any time he says something ridiculous or goes off on a caller or falls asleep. And it daily, it provides me a smile because there's always great content from his show that day. And as someone who hasn't really, you know, listened or followed much of Mike Francesa's career outside of what this station has played and that Twitter account, in my mind, he's kind of a punchline. But I know he hasn't always been like that. And I know that when I've heard you, Bob, talk about him on your show, he wasn't always like that for you.
No, not at all. I mean, honestly, it's a microcosm of the industry and a couple of different industries. First, the sports talk one, and then the social media one that has kind of brought this all to a head. But in the very, very early days of my so-called career, I was just a bright-faced young lad sitting in a college dorm room who was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, which I think is a pretty big topic for people that age. And I wanted to be in sports, and I thought the only avenue was play-by-play. And a few guys kind of changed my view that you could just talk about sports and not necessarily be at a game. And you know, that's the birth of sports talk radio. I mean, it's just to imagine a world without it now is ridiculous. But, of course, many of us grew up where sports talk radio is just a hour and a half show at night, or a concept that only big cities had, or just something that was very rare. So you had to be in the right place at the right time. And you almost had to set an appointment that, oh yeah, at 6 o'clock tonight, in my case, Brian Manthe up in Wisconsin was going to talk about the Brewers and the Bucks and the Packers for an hour tonight, because that's all the news talk station would give them. And so when I was 16 or so in Sports Illustrated, they talked about the first all sports station in New York, WFAN. And that station was going to do sports all day. Now, they were kind of fibbing because they were still going to do IMUS in the morning, as I recall, which was definitely not sports. In fact, he would make fun of sports. But the rest of the day, it was all sports. Now, it was all New York sports, but who cares? These guys are actually talking about sports at 11 in the morning and at 1 in the afternoon and at 4 in the afternoon. And it's actually, for me, it really applied, because at midnight you could tune in your AM radio from where I was going to school in Virginia, and you could hear The Fan. And so The Fan was this first beacon of hope for young guys like me to do this for a living. And their station had two guys that they built around, and it was Mike and the Mad Dog. And so, yeah, that was Mike Francesa and Christopher Russo, and they were together, and they were the first. And when I heard them as a kid, 20 years old or so, I couldn't believe how awesome it was that they were, I think, as I recall, it was like 1 to 6. So they had a 5-hour show. and they would just talk about sports. And when you asked, what does that mean? They would literally make a big deal about the lineup card coming out for that night's Mets game. And they would just go down the lineup card, but they would do it in a way that sometimes took 15 or 20 minutes. And they're talking about all their impressions on what this means. And boy, what's this going to do? And boy, what's the manager thinking here? And then, and I think I've said this on the air, I heard these guys talk about a Clippers-Knicks game that was coming up that night. Now, on the ticket, we don't preview games hardly ever. We might preview a Cowboys game, but nobody previews tonight's Mavs game on the radio except maybe on a ticker. But I swear to you, they talked 1.5 hour about the Clippers coming to visit the Knicks tonight, two bad teams, and they were talking about the players on each roster in such a advanced way from anything I had ever heard on the radio before. I was mesmerized, even though I didn't care about the game. They kind of made me care about the game. So yeah, many, many years ago, Francesa was, you know, the first, you know, and so for me that, that had an impression. Now, how has it changed? It's changed because now there's accountability. There was never accountability back then. And that's kind of something I'm proud of on our show, is that we do keep our misses and we kind of make fun of them and we time capsule them. And we make sure that if somebody's going to make a bold claim and they're going to be wrong, we're going to hold their feet to the fire. It's not going to disappear. Well, back then it would disappear. And so Twitter is kind of the police for accountability for these legends in sports broadcasting. And so that account that mesmerizes you is just kind of holding his feet to the fire. And unfortunately, we're finding out that he's probably just a big windbag. And we were fooled for many, many years.
Well, it is amazing that, A, he even lets that account go, because a lot of what he pulls is straight from that app that Francesa owns, where he charges subscribers $8.99 a month. So yeah. I don't know if he just writes that off as, you know, no such thing as bad publicity. Yeah. But, you know, I am, you know, genuinely wondering, and I don't know how much of his daily shows you catch now outside of what gets posted online. But
no, zero. Okay. I see the same as you see.
So it probably is kind of hard to remember what, exactly he was talking about back then. But do you think that it's him that's changed and he's kind of changed the way he approaches his daily show, to where he talks about the times that the NFL's approached him to coach and all these ridiculous things, or was he different back then?
That's a good question. And honestly, I often say to Dan a cliche that I think I made up, but if I stole it from someone, I apologize and I'll give them credit. But the cliche is longevity is often confused for excellence, which basically means the guys that we started listening to when we were kids are the guys that we're likely to give a free pass to as old men, just because they've been with us our whole life. You know, the guys we listen to on the radio, we don't want to hold their feet to the fire. We want to believe they're legends. And that's a good question on whether or not he's lost his fastball and stopped trying, or now is there just someone actually fact-checking everything he's saying, as opposed to the old days where, you know, I would hear 10 minutes of his show, and anything that he would say would just be a pleasure to hear, and then you would go on with your life. You wouldn't have a Twitter thread or somebody emailing you, did you catch what he said? He said that Sam Darnold would never play in the NFL or whatever, you know, whatever he would say. Right. It would, in the past, it would just disappear. And like I said, for better or for worse, social media has kind of changed the game for a lot of, I would say, sports broadcasters who are in their 60s or older. This has kind of changed their world, almost like the internet kind of changed their world. I you know, there's a lot of guys in the industry, Norm's age, who used to get on the phones with people from other cities to kind of tell each other what's in that city's newspaper. And then they would have this inside information that nobody figured out. How did this guy find out what Chicago is about to make a trade? He's doing a radio show in Dallas or in Atlanta. How do they know this? Well, they would just call their equivalent in another city, and they would read the newspaper to each other. That was before the internet existed, so that information was impossible. Well, now everybody has that information just with Google, so it's really changed the game, I think.
Francesca's show is very, it's the old school type call-based type talk show, and it seems like it's like radio has changed now. Sports talk has changed, and I think the ticket has a lot of credit to do with that, where you're not relying on your callers as much. You're relying on your talent and your opinions. Is this what you like when you grew up listening to this and you were at Liberty and you were a young broadcaster? Is this what you saw is when you wanted to have a sports talk show? Is this what you kind of wanted to? And then when you moved to Dallas and you got a gig here, did the ticket kind of change that with you and you kind of evolved? 100%. And when you started working with Dan?
100%. I think when I was 20, I thought that doing a sports talk show was like being able to pass a test every day, because the callers would present you with a question or a quiz or something, and you had to be so studied that you could answer anything anybody would ever ask you about sports. Well, we don't really do shows like that anymore, and I don't know that the industry necessarily does. But there's something to that, and that's why you can catch him in misinformation so easily, is because a caller can literally just call his show in an effort to try to pants him, you know, just try to expose him. And that's kind of the industry as I thought it was once upon a time. I think what we do is better, but I also think, that's what I kind of grew up thinking it was going to be, and I kind of think I would enjoy doing something like that still. And I also wonder if we've gone too far with not enough calls. I don't know. I know we've almost trained our listeners to get impatient with callers and not really enjoy that. But I think that in its infancy, that was the whole point of the business, is a chance for you to talk sports with somebody who may be an expert. And, you know, the game's changed there. The other thing that does bother me about the industry a little bit is, or I don't know if bother is the word, maybe it's a cautionary warning for even us at the ticket, is I think it's still important to kind of be a dude's first love on the radio. I always get concerned that there's people in Dallas, especially of a younger age, that don't even know the ticket exists. And so the first time they're exposed to sports talk, it might be somewhere else. And it might be, it might be Stephen A. Smith on television. It might be Skip Bayless on television. It might be the Cowboys flagship. It might be somewhere else. And they get used to that style, and they kind of fall in love with it. And they don't know that there's something better out there. And I know that's a subjective point, but I do think there's something about catching someone at an early point in their life, and they really fall in love with that style, partly because they don't know there's 15 styles. And so that's the one they really get used to. And I sometimes wonder if as everyone continues to age and AM radio disappears into the ether, basically what I'm saying is, if you know a 20-year-old in Dallas, you gotta make sure he knows the ticket exists, because I think he would love it. I just don't know that 20-year-olds know the ticket exists as much as some other outlets for sports talk who do the job kind of in a different way that I don't think is as good. How about that?
I think
how about me trying to advertise on the ticket?
Right. Yeah. Be sure to listen noon to three. I think the one thing that really plagues Francesa, and I think this affects a lot of people that are in this business, but I think it's really ramped up for him, is his inability to say, I don't know. Because a lot of callers will, try to draw him off sides, because it's so easy to do now. But
and fun.
It's absolutely fun, because you also know that this may end up being a clip, but he suffers from the inability to say, I don't know, because a lot of people will ask him questions about things that he doesn't know. Like, one guy asked him, how many Alabama players can you name outside of Tua? And he just, you know, he hung up on the guy and got real mad and said, I'm not here to amuse you and do all that. Someone's asked him about Ja Morant, and he said, yeah, you know, I like what I've seen of the kid, even though there's no chance he has watched a second of Ja Morant. I think that right. he does that a lot because he's trying, you know, he wants to have credibility, and I think a lot of people suffer from that, and I do think that's the stem of a lot of these, is instead of saying, I'm not 100% knowledgeable on that, I have to look more into that, he just flies off the cuff and says something, and I think a lot of that is what comes back and bites him in the rear end.
Oh, I think you're right, and I think that was the path I was on, where you tried to know everything. But the problem is, again, the internet changed the game to where I don't know, and I know like Chuck Cooperstein was great at this, Norm was great at this, I tried to be great at it, but the idea of a guy who literally knows everything about every sport, that was a big part of our business 2 decades ago. And I, you know, like I said, I prepared accordingly. I wanted to be that guy who knew everything about everything. I guess I still do. I mean, I guess I'm still a sports know-it-all, or thinks I am, and you know, portrays myself as that. You know, it's a weird conversation to try to analyze yourself. But I also have realized that there's too many experts in all these niches across the sports spectrum, if you will, and therefore you kind of got to pick where you're going to give up your real estate. And if you're going to try to be this guy, you can, but just know you're not going to have a social life, and your wife is going to get annoyed at you at some point. And at some point, you just got to say, look, I tried to be an expert on everything. Let me just admit to you right now, I'm not watching as much baseball as I once did. Why don't I let somebody else tell me what's going on over there? And I'll try to keep up, but I'm not going to try to be the know-it-all, have the high ground in baseball. I'm not going to have the high ground in college basketball. I'm not going to have the high ground in the basketball draft. You know, just all these things that I once probably tried to cover. I just think it's disingenuous and almost insulting to show up every day as, you know, so it's March now. Well, let me tell you how to fill out your brackets.
Yeah, I think that honesty is endearing if you let people know that I don't know everything about this, but I'm going to bring someone on so we can still talk about it.
Yeah, and I'm going to try to get you a good answer, you know, because I'm naturally curious about it. I'd like to know everything still, but there's just too many experts now in too many different fields for some mighty sportsman to walk into a studio and say, you can't challenge me on anything. And, you know, I think people have really enjoyed when I got pantsed with Efren Herrera or all these times in my time at the Ticket, where I did try to high ground people with the cubicle stuff, and it ended up blowing up in my face. And I think that's sometimes people's favorite memories when know-it-all guy gets, something blows up in his face. So I honestly, I enjoy goofing on Francesa now, or really any of the sports know-it-alls, because it hits so close to home. And I realized that if I didn't work at the Ticket, where everyone at the Ticket kicks each other so often that you learn to take yourself a little less seriously, what if the fan would have hired me, 20 years ago? Would I have ever got off that try to be sports King Kong? No, you know, just. I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is that could have probably been my pass if I didn't meet Dan, who kind of helped teach me that, look, it's okay to be a normal dude who just says, I don't know sometimes, I guess. This is a weird look in the mirror. I don't know.
Well, you should go wake Dan up and tell him how much he means to you.
Is Dan awake right now?
Yes, I think he is. Okay. I think he doesn't want to miss the early bus to the United Center. But I would say that sometimes Francesa was an inspiration, but also an example of how not to handle things at times, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Bob, we got to let you go, but we appreciate you taking time out of your work/vacation to come on with us and talk about this, because I do think you were the foremost expert on this.
Well, thank you, and yes, Norm.
Does it hurt?
What?
It's okay.
I'm in pretty good shape, right?
Yeah, we should have got you a little more context.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
All right, thanks,
see you
Bob.
Tomorrow. Love you.
There's Bob Sturm from the Ticket.